According to our next guest, there is the internet we know and may not completely trust, and then there's a part of the internet most of us don't know about and should be really, really wary of. It is part of the internet that is encrypted and hidden and an underworld home to pornography and black markets, trolls, criminals, extremists. Jamie Bartlett's new book, The Dark Net, brings us into this world. He is director of the Center for the Analysis of Social Media at the think tank Demos. Before joining Demos, he was a research associate at the international humanitarian agency Islamic Relief. Again, the title of the new book is The Dark Net, Inside the Digital Underworld. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Jamie Bartlett to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's very nice to have you with us. And this topic is fascinating in that, I guess, we all sort of, you know, the cloak and dagger stuff, we sort of assume existed, but you went into it and really expose it and take a hard look at what really is there, which in some ways is worse than what we could have even imagined, isn't it?
Well, in some ways worse, and in other ways I thought actually quite reassuring or counterintuitive. What you find on, I suppose, anywhere really where people act under the conditions of anonymity is a sort of explosion of freedom and creativity. And along with the list of very bad things that you rightly mentioned at the beginning, there's of course a lot of very good things happening in these hidden parts of the internet, because it's the place where the whistleblowers go. It's the place where the democratic dissidents go. It's the place where people who are trying to avoid surveillance from their dictatorships in less pleasant parts of the world. So you will really find the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, the truth is I was focusing mainly on the bad and the ugly, because I felt that's, in a sense, the least understood and the least explored. That's the thing we write about and we worry about, but I felt that very few people had ever really gone in and tried to understand it objectively. So, yeah, I set myself the task of, as you said, very carefully and honestly trying to investigate some of these deeper, darker corners.
What I found fascinating is you talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Ultimately, it was trying for your work of what you were doing in your everyday life that kind of brought you into this, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, a lot of the work that I do in my day job, so to speak, is looking at how radical and extreme political and social movements use the internet, and that includes Islamist extremists, for example. And what you find is that those on the fringes, those radicals on the fringes, are often the sort of early adopters of new and interesting and unusual types of technology. Anything that they can use to keep themselves hidden or push their message to more people. And that's certainly what I was finding, and I decided that I wanted to try to investigate it more.
And in that investigation, what did you find of how that underworld works in that case?
So, I mean, each chapter is a different story, and in each sort of a different subculture, and it was everything from internet trolls to suicide forums and pro-anorexia communities online, neo-Nazis, and much else besides. But in each case, it was always slightly different when you go in and sort of objectively look at it. Take the example of the Silk Road, the sort of notorious underground drugs market,
right,
which, you know, quite recently, I think, Ross Ulbricht was sentenced to multiple life sentences,
yes,
without parole. And everyone, I think, misunderstood this site. It was a place online that you accessed with a special anonymous browser. You paid, you ordered your drugs with the cryptocurrency Bitcoin, and they'd arrive at your door. Terrifying stuff, but the secret of it was that it was a functioning competitive marketplace that operated in the interests of the consumer. Because it was a marketplace, it was something like Amazon or eBay, but for drugs. Essentially, what that meant was that there was a competitive pressure among vendors to provide excellent customer service, high quality products at low prices, and that's what kept people coming back. And that's why it turned over, I think, $1.2 billion in sales over a two-year period. That was the secret. It wasn't about all the clever encryption. They'd been incredibly innovative and creative and managed to produce a functioning competitive marketplace for drugs. You know, and that's an example of how, actually, when you go in there and look closely, you'll often find things aren't quite as they seem.
And in that competition, in that competitive marketplace, they're basically using all the things that you would in a normal marketplace of clever marketing and cheaper rates and usability and security and all the things that you would do to drive customers in.
Exactly right, you know, and that they are incredibly good at it as well. In a world where no one knows each other, they all adopt pseudonyms. And the only way you can trust a vendor is by looking at the user reviews that other people have left, much like you would on Amazon or eBay. Because you obviously can't pay with your credit card, you pay with a cryptocurrency, but they've created all kinds of clever systems of laundering the money and making the transaction very secure. And yeah, you're right, when you actually go on the site, you will find, you know, glossy, high-resolution images of the products. You'll find terms and conditions, shipping policies, refund policies. You'll even, I mean, most bizarrely of all, there was a button that said, report this item, meaning, you know, if you think this drugs product isn't what it says it is, you make sure to tell the site administrator. And, you know, after a couple of days of this, you actually get completely used to it. It feels like shopping on any other type of e-commerce site.
You write in the book, encryption and the cryptocurrency Bitcoin have created the technical conditions that allow Silk Road to exist, but it's the user reviews that make it work.
That's exactly right. And this idea that you could create an anonymous market where people only ever use fake names depends on, you need a system of reputation, because you need to, you know, how do you ensure trust in an anonymous marketplace? And the way is to have a user review system where different users will always write detailed feedback on the product that they've bought, and that allows other users to make judgments about who they want to spend their money with. And of course, what this does is creates that competition and choice, which is the reason in the end why everything we know about the Silk Road suggests that price was highly competitive compared to street drugs, and product quality and purity was far superior. Now, that's actually quite important, because too many people die of drugs overdoses because they don't know the purity of their products, or it's been cut with mixing substances, and there's all crime associated with the street dealing, and a lot of that is cut out. So something like the Silk Road actually creates something of a moral dilemma. You know, it's probably bad, because more people can access more drugs, and I don't think that's good for society. But if you do access drugs, it's a safer way of doing it.
We started our conversation by talking about the good and the bad and the ugly. It seems as though it's hard to get much uglier than the proliferation of child pornography that you write about on hidden sites. And equally disturbing is who ultimately is downloading it.
Yeah, it's a very difficult subject to write about and to talk about, of course, and understandably why. And I suppose the story here has been, in the same way that digital technology has allowed every type of information, every type of data file to be easily copied and easily shared and very difficult to censor, it's the same for good information as it is for bad information. And so, unfortunately, it has made trying to sort of control the flow of illegal images far more difficult for the authorities. You know, back in the 1990s, there were hundreds or maybe thousands of known illegal images of children in circulation. Now it's routine to find on an offender's computer, you know, 1 million, 2 million images, because the problem is that once you shut a site down that hosts these illegal images, people have already downloaded them to their own computers and then can re-upload them again to another website. And it just means you're sort of decentralizing the possession of these images, which just it just makes the task for the authorities so difficult. And unfortunately, what that means, I think, is that there are some people who, I suppose, because the barriers to entry are lowered, because it's easier to access, they will end up accessing it. And I think we're seeing a sort of creation of a new type of offender, which I call the browser, someone who almost accidentally stumbles into this material and then ends up staying there.
Talk a little bit about anonymity and what you learned about how that can ultimately influence and change behavior when you're online.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, one of the overarching themes, sort of what anonymity does to us. And I don't want to be too hard on the idea of anonymity, because your fabulous Federalist Papers, written by some of your founding fathers, were written under the fake names and under the conditions of anonymity, because it meant people felt like they could say what they really meant without fear or favor. And so there's so many good uses for anonymity, but certainly for some people, feeling like you can't be caught, feeling like you don't have to look at the person you're speaking to or communicating with, feeling like there's no consequences to your actions, leads some people to become, I suppose, far nastier, far more cruel, far more likely to pursue or explore certain curiosities that they probably shouldn't. And so what I found, yes, there were certain people that in the real world, friendly, caring, thoughtful, decent people, put them behind a screen, and they suddenly take great pleasure in insulting and bullying complete strangers, often just for the fun of it. Perhaps because they're bored, perhaps because they want to explore what it feels like to be nasty online. But either way, the effect on the victim, of course, is the same. And that is, it can feel really, really tough, and I've had it happen to me before, when you're bombarded by a complete stranger online. And unfortunately, that in a way is the cost of anonymity. It allows the Federalist Papers to be written, and it also means internet trolls can sort of bully and insult complete strangers. And I am afraid to say I don't think you can have one without the other.
In the minute or so that we have left, what ultimately do you hope people take away from this as all of what is happening really changes at lightning speed?
Yeah, the reason I wrote the book in the beginning was because I saw a young woman very foolishly and naively sharing naked photos of herself online. And then I saw how those photos, she was found out, her identity was found out, and those photos were shared with her family and friends. And it was devastating for her. And what I thought I needed to do was to at least shine a light on some of this. So it might be a bit shocking to read, but I think it's important for people to understand the risks of what can happen when you go online. And therefore, because let's face it, we're going to do it. We're going to do stupid things. Young kids especially are going to make mistakes. I would just like them to know the risks and hopefully be a little more prepared for what lies beneath when they get there.
Jamie Bartlett is the director of the Center for the Analysis of Social Media at the think tank Demos, where he specializes in online social movements and the impact of technology on society. The new book is The Dark Net, Inside the Digital Underworld, and it is published by Melville House. Jamie Bartlett, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you very much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Dark Net, by Jamie Bartlett. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.